You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there. Tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm Chris, and with me is
Wes
and
Oren.
And we are talking about humor, but I hope you are not actually expecting this opening to be humorous. We are very dull people. We are here to study humor in a purely theoretical level. There will be no joking around. And absolutely none of those lowbrow puns, which are not funny, by the way.
They're definitely not. They are a sign that your humors are out of balance.
No, no puns.
I'm sorry, Chris. I don't know what you expected.
It's a very serious topic where we will be examining theoretical humor. It's a dry and dull subject.
I've actually decided that comedy is not allowed anymore because every time we explain storytelling rules, some very big-brained person comes along and is like, but what about this comedy that doesn't do that thing you're talking about? And it's like, I don't have time to explain to you that comedy is different than drama. So instead, I'm just going to ban comedy. That's my solution.
Probably a safe one.
A site for speculative fiction storytellers except for comedians. Go away.
Yeah.
Go away.
None of that nonsense around here, sir.
So yeah, we're going to talk about humor. I'm not going to go out of my way to create jokes. I was being too serious. Don't make me make jokes. Okay, but we'll talk a little bit about, I'll talk a little bit about how humor works. And definitely humor affects the story. And we've discussed that a little bit recently in the blog, and we'll kind of get into that here. My first rule of being funny is to never believe you're funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, easily done.
And Wes, you had a quote from one of my Q&As I think you wanted to bring in. This might be a good place.
I really like this one. Actually, it kind of just gets the point of almost your introduction to this. Chris has this quote that basically says, quote, "Generally, when I'm writing humor into a story, I aim to rely on the humor not working. That means making sure all the witty lines also have a storytelling purpose and aren't just there as jokes. If you do that, then it's okay if it doesn't come off as funny as you were hoping. You can keep practicing without worrying about getting it wrong." And that's great because I will say everyone, but it's probably just me. Like, I've made plenty of jokes that didn't land, and then I just sit there staring at everybody.
That's why you should only ever tell puns, because the whole point of a pun is that it doesn't work. No one likes puns. It's beautiful. I love it.
Doesn't that just defeat the point of a joke, though? Isn't the purpose of a joke to, you know, bring joy into people's lives?
You know, that's what I thought, but then I discovered puns. Apparently not.
The purpose of Oren's puns is to induce groaning. Ugh. The worst thing about a pun is that the second someone says it, everyone knows it and everyone hates it.
Basically, the whole thing is, I think that if you think of yourself as a funny person, and hey, maybe other people do manage to think of themselves as funny and they're still funny and that's great, good for them. But that's at the point in which you start to sort of go on a limb and rely on your lines to be funny to work instead of like slipping them in there. It's the same principle for references. We've talked about references before, where some stories will slip in like inside references to the world or to the actors playing the characters or other things like that. And, you know, for some of them, if you don't understand what it's referencing, it's just weird. Like, why did we take a dramatic pause introducing this character? It's like, okay, it turns out this character is being played by a really famous actor or famous within the community that they expect to watch this story, right? That's weird. Or there can just be a familiar actor you can take joy from that doesn't do a dramatic pause that makes other people scratch their heads. You know, and this is why I think banter also works really well in text stories, is a lot of times your conversation is also accomplishing something else. It could be an argument or a conflict or otherwise moving the plot forward, but then you can also slip some wittiness in there. And if people don't think it's funny, it's okay, it's still moving things forward. Maybe people just think it's amusing and not funny, that kind of thing. Certainly, that's my go-to when it comes to putting humor in stories, is not try to call super attention to it, to multitask.
All right, can I put two jokes before you, two, like, movie jokes, and that I have very opposite reactions to, and see if I can get your take on maybe why I'd have those reactions, because I have a really hard time intellectualizing my response to humor.
Okay, but first, are those jokes puns?
No, and also they're not my jokes. I didn't make them.
Oh, okay. Can I test some material out on you guys?
I swear these come from movies, yeah. Not mine.
Welcome to my open mic night. And I guess maybe even calling these jokes is wrong, but they're like supposed to be funny. One of them is from Thor Ragnarok, and the other is from Avengers Infinity War. And the first one is near the end, the Rock character that Taika Waititi plays, I think that's how you say his name, I forget the Rock character's name, just has this weird line where as they're like watching Asgard that they've just fled, and they're like watching it basically fall apart, he has this weird line where he's like, "Oh, the damage isn't so bad. As long as the foundation lasts, then we'll make this a haven for outcasts from around the galaxy." And then, like, the planet explodes. And I hated that line. I was like, stop talking. No one asked you to talk. This is an important moment. Why are you talking? I hate you. And then there's, in Infinity War, there's that line where Peter's like, "What's your name?" to Doctor Strange. And Strange's like, "I'm Doctor Strange." And Peter's like, "Oh, we're using our made-up names. Then I'm Spider-Man." And that joke, I laughed so hard. And I feel like I shouldn't have. Like, I don't think it's that funny, but it just really made me laugh. And I'm trying to figure out, like, why do I hate the first one, but think the second one is hilarious? What is going on?
Should we get into how humor works, and then we can loop back to these a little bit?
All right, sure.
Because I think, like, that kind of brings up some of the things I'll talk about. So, like, for one thing, a lot of people say that humor is subjective. I think that's a cop-out. That's basically not our approach at MythGreens, right? Technically, sure, stories are subjective. That's not helpful, right? We want to know if there are differences, why are those differences there, right? And, you know, how can we anticipate differences? All those things. Those things are useful. So humor, first of all, it requires surprise. And that means generally that events deviate significantly from expectations. Like, often the opposite happens. So, for instance, in our Ragnarok joke that you just brought up, where, you know, he's like, "Oh, this is going to be a haven, blah, blah." The purpose of that is to set up an expectation that is then suddenly subverted. Basically, all humor is subversive at some level, by the planet suddenly exploding. So we've got the surprise, usually the opposite happens, but it can't be an unhappy surprise. I noticed this with myself especially because I really like morbid humor, but I think that's partly because I'm not bothered by, I can throw out the idea of people, you know, getting their heads chopped off or whatever, and as long as it's silly and light and I'm not, like, you know, building attachment around those characters, I'm not bothered by it. I'll just think it's funny. Other people, not so on board. I've been trying to, like, give my comic, I have a weekly gag comic, I'll probably talk about more, less morbid twists, punchlines, because I don't think that many people besides me think that they're funny.
I did have to remind you about that recently. That was an interesting experience.
So I had to edit that comic. But, you know, for me, I like things, I'm not a big fan of horror, but I do like things a little on the darker side. So it takes a little bit more negativity to impact me emotionally in a story. And so I will find some things that are a little darker, funnier, that other people will just be like, "Gosh, that's just sad." So one reason, for instance, the Ragnarok joke might not work is if you just find that sad. Like, "I'm just unhappy that that planet exploded." That joke's not going to land so well.
I'll offer a little bit more on my thoughts on that, because I didn't find it that funny, but I wasn't like, "Why is that?" That character just kind of runs his mouth whenever he's, like, on screen. So it's not that out of place, but it's a good example of just, like, situational irony. Like, he's trying to set something up and then boom, like, the entire situation changes on you. But it doesn't, you never felt like it wasn't going to do that. I never did anyway. And that's why it wasn't funny.
You weren't surprised.
I wasn't, yeah, exactly, Chris. I was not surprised at all.
Maybe it's just because they'd already said they were going to destroy Asgard. And so, like, I was expecting to watch Asgard explode and then having this guy who's not even from Asgard, kind of making light of it just seemed rude. It's like, let me make a joke about your planet as it's exploding in front of you. And it's like, maybe you could not.
Yeah, but it does have to surprise you. If somebody spoils it, the surprise, right? You see it coming. You know, you don't, or the expectation, they try to set up this expectation. If you don't jump on board with that, if it doesn't actually set your expectation before it subverts it, then the joke will not be funny. Then, even though you're surprised by something that significantly deviates from your expectations, it still has to make sense at some level. If it's just a bizarre twist that comes out of left field, it's not funny.
It's Dadaism.
Generally. So you have to, and this is where like a similar set of like cultural expectations and cultural references actually become really important. References and the shared, you know, feeling of familiarity about something makes a huge difference. And so then we get back to the joke that is funny, right? Where that joke is built off of a shared experience with watching all of these movies where we have this concept of people having two names, right? They have their real name, this conceit where they have their real name and then they have this other name that they give people. And it's inherently kind of absurd, but we've just been accepting it. Right. And so then when somebody kind of makes a twist based on that, you have that shared experience and that expectations that are set there. And that is what that helps it be funny. My gag comic, again, is about storytelling tropes. And one thing I've learned is that for it to be funny, people do actually have to be familiar with the trope. And that's one of the trickiest parts about it, because if I am referencing a trope that not enough people have heard of, it's not going to be funny to people. They're just not going to get it. They're just not going to understand it. At the same time, if it's so familiar, people have already seen too many jokes about it, right? It also might be less funny because it's a little bit cliche. It's not as surprising, you know, what have you. So it's trying to find the thing that people are unfamiliar with. Probably my biggest victory in this area is a recent comic that made a joke about how when you see somebody in a like a spinny chair, but it's they're facing away from you, how they're always dead.
Or they're about to do something shady, that's for sure.
Either they're dead, or, you know, there's one other situation in which they're a villain that has a cat in the lap. But there's just been way too many TV shows that have just used the same surprise where somebody gets murdered and then the protagonists walk up from behind the chair and they're like, Fred? And they like reach out and then like the chair suddenly, you know, turns around and they've got like a slit throat and we see this like horrific looking expression on their face, and it's Dunman Stone so often, right, that people recognize that pattern, right? The joke becomes funny, and if they don't. So there's, you know, a certain level of shared experience. I used to always wonder, like, the Sunday comics are never funny. I don't understand how these are successful. But I think the main reason is because they were just for like baby boomers. You know, they're for a different generation of people that have different cultural expectations and cultural references that help set those expectations, that help make the punchline make sense to them, and all those other things.
Man, if I ever like have an arch enemy that I've like captured and put in a room, I'm gonna make them watch Lower Decks without having seen Star Trek before. But I mean, that was the reason why I decided to retire my role-playing comic strip, was that the jokes that I was making were just too obscure. It's like, I don't want to make D&D jokes, and D&D jokes are like the only jokes that the RPG community as a whole can be counted on to get.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's like, here, let me make a joke about how this one mechanic in Torchbearer works. It's like, okay, first of all, what's Torchbearer? And second, what are you talking about? And it's like, oh, I think that's funny.
I mean, honestly, it's sad, but that's a big reason why we don't do so much role-playing content. We almost never do role-playing content anymore, is because we are one of the people sticking it out for all the different, like, indie games. And it's just D&D all the way down, everywhere.
Except for we have my brother come on to write D&D posts, because those do really well traffic-wise.
Yeah, I gotta take advantage of that search engine reputation in the role-playing.
We need the SEO juice! The juice!
Juice.
It's SEO juice that we now use for the D&D stuff we never wanted to write before. Okay, anyway, so sometimes I wonder if humor is like how we're rewarded for having a realization that something is not at all what we previously thought, right? Because it makes sense, but it's really surprising. We had an assumption. That assumption turned out to be wrong. That's kind of the basis of humor.
And then after that, like, you know, you have your assumption it's wrong, gets flipped, but it becomes that that character has that quirk and was introduced that way. And then it repeats throughout, but we still tend to find it a little funny. I'm mostly thinking about when Detritus the Troll is first introduced to the Watch in Discworld, and he salutes so hard that he knocks himself out. And the way the narrator keeps making that known to you does keep it fresh, but it's the same slapstick humor. Because, you know, the first time it describes it very well, like that he salutes, hits himself on the head, and knocks himself out. But then it eventually gets to where, you know, Vimes is addressing the Watch and says like an order, and it's just thunk, and everybody turns around and sees Detritus on the ground. It's the same thing, but it's packaged differently to still try to keep it fresh. And I think that works in some cases.
I'm wondering if one of the reasons that running jokes work is if they continue to be surprising. I don't really, you know, I've learned about humor. I don't fully understand running jokes, but just as an example, we have this joke that I would had in my Aragon critique post where we had the very beginning, this lines from the villain where he was just commanding his minions and he was like, you know, line up and attack the protagonists as they come or die. And it was just like this, what a bizarre line, right? And it was just like in the dialogue, you know, dot, 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 or die. And I was making fun of that. And so I was like, okay, every time I give somebody a command ever, I'm just going to add or die to the end of it. And so I snuck several or dies in the text of my post. And people just thought this was hilarious, right? And then I did it again to my Aragon sequel post, and people still thought it was hilarious. We've done it a number of times now. But I think one of the things that makes that joke continue to work is the fact that I just, you know, do my normal writing, and then I just look for opportunities in what I'm normally saying to just stick that in there. And so it's always surprising when it crops up, because I'm just talking about something totally else, right? You've been lulled into a false sense of security that this thing, and then it's like suddenly pops out at you. And so it's always surprising when it happens.
Especially since the stakes are suddenly so high. Oh my God, I have to listen to Chris.
Also, I feel like we're getting into like meme theory now. It's funny because we get it and we know other people don't. I'm not an expert on meme theory. I just understand that's one of the basic things about why memes are funny, and like how memes have this weird contradiction where you want a lot of people to get them, but you don't want everyone to get them. It's weird, but I feel like running jokes might have something to that.
Right, certainly like insider jokes or running jokes, part of their appeal is the fact that you are, you know, identifying yourself as part of an exclusive group because you get it. And considering how much jokes rely on those types of references, yeah, that might be a factor in a lot of jokes. It's hard for me to say for sure right now, at least.
But I mean, like, that does show the value of a, you know, shared cultural experience like Star Trek. Because, I mean, there's Lower Decks, and there's also John Scalzi's novel Red Shirts, both of which are basically Star Trek jokes. You know, it's just in, you know, Scalzi's is not officially licensed. But they both basically depend on you having seen Star Trek. Now, they do have their own stories, right? They aren't just nothing but jokes, but there's a lot of jokes in there. And I wouldn't recommend that most of the time, because, you know, if someone watches or reads this who doesn't get it, it's like, oh well, I don't know, what's the point of this? But with something as common as Star Trek, it you know, that's if your entire audience is people who have seen Star Trek, I feel like you're okay. You know, you can manage that, especially if you call it Red Shirts. That's advertising to Star Trek fans. It makes it much less likely that someone who doesn't know the references is going to pick this book up.
When I do punchlines in my kind of weekly gag comic, which is on storytelling tropes, it's interesting how much I found that punchlines are basically plot twists, because you have to surprise people, but it still has to make sense, which is exactly how you set up a plot twist. I do think it would be really hard to do that kind of like gag comic with any kind of overarching story, though, because very few stories can sustain lots of plot twists, right? Like, you're just going to ruin the story at some point by sacrificing everything else to making things unexpected. We were talking about Nancy Drew, I think, a while back, And Nancy Drew has lots of twists in the story, and it does a good job with it for a surprisingly long time, but by the end of the first season, things stop making sense. There's only so many plot twists you can put in a story. It's just only... And so having things be disconnecting and not having a story connecting all of the comics allows you to actually bring in those strong punchlines. Whereas if you have a comic that has, you know, more of a story to it, yes, you can have jokes, but it's not going to be that same like regular punchline, or the punchlines won't be as strong, I think.
Should we talk about banter?
Sure.
I think witty banter is nice because when we were talking about needing to be in on the joke, witty banter and like misinterpretations of the meanings of words, like that opens up the territory for, I think, a lot of us to get in on the joke just by virtue of the word getting like maybe misunderstood as part of like a banterous exchange between people. I'm currently reading Jingo of the Discworld. And so there's a ton of Colin and Nobby, obviously. And anytime Colin and Nobby are talking to each other, I lose my mind. It is just too much for me. They're funny because, you know, they're Watchmen and they're very different types. Nobby is maybe humanoid-ish, but, you know, he's kind of set up to be this just kind of like scoundrel. And then Colin takes himself way more seriously and thinks he's way more seriously than he actually is. And so then whenever Nobby asks him for advice or what things mean, and then he always replies and he's almost always wrong. And then Nobby follows up and you don't know if Nobby's being serious or not. I think that if he's like being sarcastic to try to like put him down, there was something recent where they're in the submarine or whatever Leonard calls it, not a submarine, something great. And then they overhear the word hieroglyphs. And Nobby asks Colin what that means. And he says it's something to do with the sea life that they see out the window. And then Nobby says, oh, okay, so if it was farther down in the ocean, it'd be a lower glyph, right? Just like, and of course, you know, Colin is like, absolutely. Stone-faced. Oh boy, I just can't handle it. Buffoons doing witty banter is too much for me.
But speaking of Terry Pratchett and Discworld, I think probably one of the reasons why Discworld has never been as funny to me as it is to a lot of other people is a lot of the references, the witty things that Terry Pratchett says, does depend on you having a certain interpretation of specific tropes in fantasy. Like the whole idea of wizards that he introduces them of, you know, having lots of power, but it's like a contest about how little you can use it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like once you've seen enough Gandalf, that becomes funny. Because that's exactly how Gandalf, for instance, is. And Dumbledore also has that thing. But you have to have, you know, thought about the wizards in your stories that way before that becomes funny.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I like, you know, his narrative presence is, and commentary on tropes, obviously, is one of the best parts of Discworld. I enjoy The Watch because I feel like, I mean, his voice is in it. It can't not be in it. But I just... they're such strong characters and they're just interactions independent of a narrator commenting on them generate a lot of amusement for me. Just, I mean, Corporal Carrot or Captain Carrot, you know, is just so straight laced. I mean, his just like foray into like Ankh Morpork to just like go arrest people when that's like not what they do. It's just a great introduction to the character. And then how he's just like not bothered by Angua turning into a wolf, like at all. Or I don't know. It's just, I think the characters are so strong and their personalities are so distinct that like they can play off each other really well because of their distinctiveness.
I do think that's important to banter in general. Like you got to start with characters that have some distinctiveness, that have some, you know, reason or to clash with each other and have some contrast with each other. And that's kind of an important part of banter. It's hard to generate banter when you don't have those characters figure it out in that way.
And The Watch is nice because there's so many of them. They can be paired up or mixed and matched a little bit more.
Yeah, The Watch does kind of have a certain TV show-like aspect to it. I guess that's why they're making it into a TV show, and everyone's really mad about it. It's a whole nother topic.
Oren, why aren't you mad? You're supposed to be mad.
I don't think we know enough about it to be mad yet. I saw the trailer and, you know, I don't know. It looks okay. We'll see. Everyone else is very upset. it's like very concerned. It's like, it's not my Discworld. And it's like, I don't know. I wasn't that attached to the way it looked in previous adaptations, so I guess we'll see. Also, for reference, the submarine is the going under the water safely device.
Yes. Thank you.
I can't say exactly why Discworld is funny, other than like that one section in one of the Guards books. It might just be Guards Guards, where they're talking about how, like, if you ever have to make a one in a million shot, you'll always make the one in a million shot.
Oh my god, yes.
So we have to set up the one in a million shot, but they, like, mess up and accidentally create, like, a one in 200,000 shot. So then they just miss.
Yep.
Because it wasn't hard enough. And I was like, okay, this is very funny. And, you know, I get the trope that they're referencing, and it's, you know, I feel like I'm in the in group. There we go. one thing that I want to say just as a cautionary warning is, you know, there are a lot of ways humor can go wrong, but I think the broadest way that it can fail, or at least in my experience, is when it's punching down.
Yes.
This can follow bigotry lines, right? Like, you know, making jokes about gay people or people of color or whatever. That's don't. But it can be more basic than that. When someone is in a position of power and they make jokes about someone who is less powerful than they are, it's just generally not funny.
It's mean.
It is mean.
It is mean. And, like, I don't know, there are some exceptions. Like, I laugh when I watch Blackadder. And Blackadder is constantly making fun of Baldrick, who is his, like, servant. And I, you know, I don't know why I find that funny when in a lot of other situations I wouldn't. But generally speaking, if someone is more powerful than somebody else, if making fun of them isn't going to seem funny, it's just going to seem cruel.
If you can punch up.
Because I feel like that's the point of comedy. You know, if you're not speaking truth to power, what are you doing?
And even if it's funny... Right. It's just not the right thing to make fun of marginalized traits. And that includes things that you don't normally think of as marginalized traits, like baldness and shortness. Right. If, you know, if somebody is regularly made fun of for having that trait and it's something they can't change, oof, that's not a good sign.
I would not do that.
But otherwise, humor can definitely ruin stories. I just think anytime that you have a joke, right, you're taking something in the story less seriously. It is designed so that you laugh at something. So for me, I think the big question you should ask is, what is that thing that the joke is taking less seriously? What expense, whose expense or what's expense is it at? And is that good for your story to reduce that to the butt of the joke, right? If it's your villain, no, your villain should not be the butt of jokes. Your villain needs to be threatening. That's a bad idea.
Please don't do that.
You know, the issue with slapstick is that you're laughing off what could be an actual, you know, this actual stakes of the story, right? Like, this is the Harry Potter problem where we have a Quidditch game where we're supposed to laugh at these, like, bludgers that knock people off of their brooms. They're supposed to be, like, funny slapstick. But then we have, like, a storyline where there's a bludger that's been enchanted to go after Harry specifically. And it could, like, it, like, breaks his arm. And that's supposed to be, like... a very serious stakes, right? And we're supposed to, like, do those things simultaneously.
That's the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 problem there. And, like, all Marvel movies have this problem to a certain extent where the fighting makes the characters feel like they're made of rubber. But in Guardians 2, they really went overboard with it, where it's like, this scene is funny because the characters are getting blown up by landmines and those, like, throw them into the air and then they land and are fine. It's like, okay, I guess nothing is dangerous. It's like, no, things are very dangerous. This scene is very tense and scary because a guy might die. And it's like, sorry, man, you already wasted that one.
I've also, you know, run into some popular storytellers who they clearly have a confidence issue when it comes to the more dramatic, serious scenes where it's almost like they're self-conscious about whether or not their drama will work. And so then they're like, oh, ho, but I'll just, you know, stick a joke in there. So not take it too seriously, and maybe because I'm afraid that my audience's attention will wander, and so I need to, they won't pay attention unless I put some jokes in there. It's like, no, the drama is also important. You don't need to be self-conscious about that. Stick with your drama. Don't use jokes at the expense of your, like, important dramatic moments. You know, just take them seriously, please. And this is the Orville problem, and also this also happens in Dragon Prince.
Yeah, it does. Well, since now we're talking about how jokes can ruin stories, that's a good place to end it. Because you shouldn't ruin your stories with a joke. Just, like, no joke is worth that. So we'll go ahead and close the podcast on that. Those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can leave a comment on the website at mythgreens.com. Before we go, I want to thank a few of our patrons. First, we have Kathy Ferguson, who's a professor of political theory in Star Trek. Next, we have Amon Jobber. He is a urban fantasy writer and a connoisseur of Marvel. And finally, we have Danita Rambo, and she lives at therambogeeks.com. We'll talk to you next week.
As your eyes open, a haunting melody fades to silence. Strange symbols circle the floor, and someone lying next to you is dead. Can you put the pieces together before you meet your doom? Find out by playing our standalone RPG, The Voyage, for sale on mythcreants.com. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.